Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Good evening. This is Terry Dodd. You are at Walls Inner Minds. I'm hoping that my co-host, Red Beckman, is online. Red, are you with us?
I just got on. I just joined you just now.
Well, all right. How are you doing today, Red?
I've done better. I've had a tough week, you know, if you don't have a tough one now and then, you don't know what a good one is when it comes. So, in everything, give thanks.
Well, are we talking about physically feeling a little rough, or just things not going your way?
That rheumatoid arthritis. I think it's partially because of all the wet weather, all the rain we're having. And that could be a factor. And then, it's been a very, very busy week with people calling in from all over the country with their tax problems. And there's a certain amount of stress involved in it, and that doesn't, can complicate things too. And this evening I'm going to have a houseful here because I've got a granddaughter, a student at the University of Idaho in Moscow, Idaho, and she's going to be here for just evening meal. And I'll miss part of that, but that is all secondary. I suspicion they won't be having their dinner until 8 o'clock, and that'll be fine for me. But anyway, if it gets a little noisy, I'll calm them down. I just told my missus to be sure and tell them to keep it down because of me being on the phone here. So that's about it. Other than that, we would sure like to get some sunshine here in this part of the world. We saw about 2 or 3 minutes of a little bit of sunshine this afternoon, about 4 o'clock, and that was it for the whole day. And we all need our vitamin D. But it'll come, and then it'll probably dry up, and we'll be hoping for rain then. Anyway, I still haven't got my garden planted. Have you got yours?
No, we went to bring a tiller over, and the last person that borrowed my buddy's tractor ran the tiller, gearbox, without oil and burned it up.
Oh, no.
So he's having to get a new one, and I'm going to have to hand till the thing early in the morning and try to get something in this weekend.
Yeah, well, our forecast is not good at all for the next several days. We've had, I don't know how many inches of rain this week. It's been spread out. If it all come at once, and most of it would run off if it came at once, and then we could dry up. But we had 2 inches in a couple of days, and then yesterday we had overnight, and in the morning we had another inch. And it just keeps coming, and everybody, even these people with their web feet out here that have been raised here or spent their lives here, it's getting on their nerves. I tell people that I don't want to complain because when I left Montana, we'd had 5 years of drought, serious drought. And so, I really should never complain about too much rain. Our sweet corn, we don't have it planted yet. And so we'll have sweet corn in September, but it'll be good then, too. So we'll take what comes. And, I built a number of raised gardens. And these are raised gardens different than what most people think of as a raised garden because they're 2 to 3 feet high, built with 3x6 cedar planks that I cribbed up. And it's, I think I've got 6 or 7 of those. And I was just out there weeding this afternoon, and I can sit on the edge and I can pull weeds, and it's a big help because I used to just crawl down the rows and pick every weed, and I always had a very clean garden. But anymore, I can't do that unless I've got somebody there to help me up when I get to the end of the row. And so these raised gardens are going to work real well.
Well, that's good. I was trying to put in about 1/2 acre. I'm going to end up getting in about 1/4 acre.
Well,
hey, Red, tell me, what do you know about the fair tax?
I don't know a great deal about it because I just don't get into the flat tax and the fair tax and all of that for the simple reason that any other tax other than what is specifically allowed by the law, the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. I don't care what they call it. If it doesn't comply with that law, then it is not a lawful tax. And I can assure you, what little I know about the fair tax, it is not a constitutionally correct tax. They've got to stick with the excise, imposts, and duties, and that's it. They're limited by law, government in this country, and they bring all these other things in and all these other forms, and we don't have enough smart people in this country to enforce the Constitution, so our politicians get away with their criminal activities. The 16th Amendment, in 1894, the Congress passed an income tax, and in 1895, the Supreme Court threw it out because they said it was unconstitutional. That was the Pollock versus Farmers Loan case. And as far as I'm concerned, and as far as the law is concerned, at this point in time, that case by the Supreme Court in 1895 is the holding case today because of all the evidence we have proving that the 16th Amendment was not ratified properly. It was not a constitutionally processed amendment to the Constitution. We have all that certified documentation. I mentioned it there Monday night in our conference call, how that in Missoula there a month ago almost now, local newspaper, the Daily Missoulian, they had tried to discourage people from coming to our Liberty Rally. and they had cut me up pretty bad, and because me and the Lee newspapers and the Daily Missoulian is a Lee newspaper, we have not gotten along too well for about 35 years. And so in the comment that they had made earlier in the week before the Liberty Conference, they said, Red Beckman says that the 16th Amendment was never ratified. And that's all they said. And, of course, I jumped on that when I spoke on that Saturday morning. It'll be 4 weeks this coming Saturday. I brought that up, and I said, the law that never was, Volume 1, which I am the co-author of, and Bill Benson is the other co-author, that book came out in April of 1985. That means it's been out for 25 years. In 25 years, and I brought this out, these newspapers, supposedly called newspapers, had never, they would report and say, Red Beckman says that the 16th Amendment was never ratified. And so I brought it out. I said, if they were a newspaper, they would send out their investigative reporters and say, Red, we want to see the documentation. We want to see the proof that you have to make the statement that the 16th Amendment was never ratified. And I told the audience there, I said, in 25 years, there hasn't been one single investigative reporter come and want to see some of the documentation. And I have gone out of my way to challenge newspapers, as they call them, with the evidence of the fact that we have this evidence and they need to take a look at it. So I brought out there at that rally that the Daily Missoulian is not a newspaper. It is not a newspaper. They just proved to the people that know how a newspaper is supposed to work that they proved that the Daily Missoulian is a government-operated propaganda sheet because they aren't investigating the truth. They're not checking for the truth. They have their reporters 5 days a week, I think, probably going to the U.S. Attorney's office and checking to see if they've got any stories that that they should report. They go and visit with the politicians and such. But when we, the people, when we come up with the truth, and it's truth that really hurts and really, you know, it really discredits the political establishment that we live under. The papers aren't there; they're propaganda sheets, and it's very obvious. And this is one of the things we have to do in the freedom movement. We've got to watch for these opportunities to discredit the so-called news media because they are not performing as a free press should. The free press is secured by the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. The free press, they're not supposed to be reporting what the government does. They're supposed to be going out to the people and seeing how the people, how they like the government, whether the government is treating them properly and whether the people figure that the government is obeying the law. But they're not doing that. Anyway, that's the story. I better let you pick up the pieces now.
Well, I had a conversation today. I went into a chat meeting that was organized through ResistNet, where they had, I think the guy's name is Ken Hoagman, who is one of the so-called experts on the fair tax, and they had Gene and I forget Joe's last name, but they were state directors for the fair tax group, and they were on there basically, you know, touting the fair tax and wanting to discuss the positive aspects of the fair tax. Well, you know, I've actually taken both sides of that argument on different occasions, depending on who I'm talking to. And of late, I've been more against it than for it. And you know, I started out looking at the positive aspects of it, you know, the fact that it would only be on new goods, it would not be on used goods or bartered goods. It is strictly a consumption tax. Therefore, there would be no use for the IRS. It calls for the dismantling of the IRS and for all of these consumption taxes to be collected through the same avenues or new avenues within the state. If they don't have a state sales tax or whatever, then they would have to set up a way to collect it in the same way that state sales tax is collected. And then that the taxes they collect would then be apportioned or passed on to the federal government by the states, and there would be no 1040 filings. There'd be no tax on income. It would wipe that out. It would, you know, they tout it as being, for example, that even the drug runners would now have to pay tax, because as it is now, their income is tax free. But now they'd be taxed because every time they wanted to buy something new, they'd have to pay the tax right along with anybody else. But if you did not want to pay the tax, you have the option of buying something that's not brand new, that hasn't just been manufactured. So it makes it a so-called voluntary system, and optional, in that, you know, if you choose, you could never buy anything brand new and never pay a tax. It would wipe out inheritance tax and all that kind of stuff. It would stop some double dipping. So I looked at all of these things. I mean, having the IRS gone and making April the 15th go away and no more 1040s, that all sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, there's just one problem with this whole thing, and this is what I was attacking them on in this chat today, and they weren't very happy with me. They were kind of looking at me like I was an Obot or something, you know, one of these Obama trolls that goes around to Patriot sites disrupting things. And now I know how they get treated, because I was getting treated that way today. You know, I was telling them, I said, hey, look, how does this stop the fraud and the theft? If none of the income tax is going to pay for any of the government operations, which it's not, we know for a fact that all of that money first goes to pay the interest on the fraudulent debt through the Federal Reserve and the international bank lords, and of course that all filters back into paying the judiciary and all of these officials and media people who are all complicit with the fraud. Not one dime of our income tax goes to actually cover the operation of anything to do with the government. It doesn't pay for our military. It doesn't pay for the building of roads or bridges or any of those things. It all goes into that interest payment to pay for the fraudulent debt that was created out of thin air. So then our government turns around and borrows basically on credit, which is, again, created out of thin air from these international banksters, and then they owe this debt, plus they pay the interest on it. And all of our tax, all of our income tax, goes to pay that fraudulent debt's interest. That's where our money goes. So how do you justify replacing that? Let's say, for example, that the fair tax is constitutional. Let's say that you're wrong, Red. Let's say that it actually creates a situation that would be lawful. It still doesn't stop the fraud and the theft. So we don't need that tax. We don't need the income tax. We don't need a fair tax. We don't need any of that. We just need for the government to operate within the limits given it in the Constitution. If they did that, we wouldn't need a fair tax or an income tax or any kind of like that tax. Do you disagree with me?
No, I don't. And excuse me. You see, they don't know how to, people don't know how to read properly. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says, and that the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect. You see, the collection of taxes has been transferred from the Congress to the executive branch of government. And, of course, it does away with the separation of powers as the founders had it figured out. The executive branch of government is always trying to usurp the power of the other two branches. Congress, you see, should be collecting the income tax today for it to be a constitutional tax. The Internal Revenue Service should be in an office right next door to the congressman's office. So that if you have a problem with the tax collector, you just go over to your representation in Congress and say, hey, congressman, get your people over here in the tax collection department, get them lined up and make them obey the law, you see. Now, that is something that needs to be done in any tax change in the collection and such. We have to insist that the Congress, they are the ones responsible for collecting the taxes. And there was method in the madness for the founders, because it is Congress that spends the money. And so you just, I mean, it just makes sense to make them collect the money that they spend. And it's one of the limitations that one of the factors that will cause the Congress to not be quite so spendthrift, because they don't have to worry at all about the tax collections today. But if they are the ones that have to collect the tax, I can assure you that it'll be a different ballgame out there. They're not going to be quite the terrorist organization that we have today. And of course, it's, you know, that's been part of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights forever. Or not the Bill of Rights, that's strictly in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. And so, you see, here we are with the world's greatest economy. And even when it's in bad shape as it is today, it's still the greatest economy in the world. And everybody wants to trade with us. Everybody wants to try to satisfy the demands of the shopper in this country. And here we are, we're letting these foreign entities come in, and the ones that really bother me are the New York, the U.S. corporations that went overseas and left thousands of employees here in this country, left them high and dry, and these corporations went overseas to China and India and all these different places, and they're producing these same products, and they're bringing them back into this country. And I believe that the Congress needs to tap into that reservoir of money and make it so that these corporations, U.S. corporations and such, that went overseas to get cheaper labor and such and improve their bottom line, they'd want to come back. They would want to get back into this country and because the cost, the taxes would discourage their overseas offshore operations. And you see, if we had no income tax, if we had strictly a voluntary tax in this country, along with a system without a central bank as we have now, if each and every state had their own state bank, such as North Dakota, you see, we would have, it would just be an explosive, it would have such a tremendous effect on our economy. If we got rid of those taxes and made it so that people were free, because this income tax is designed to limit your freedom and your liberties. That's what it was designed for by Karl Marx, and boy, it's doing exactly what they wanted it to do.
Well, let's talk about that constitutionality of the fair tax. You seem to be confident that it is not a constitutional tax. Are you saying then that it is a direct tax? Or perceive a consumption tax to be indirect?
No. It could classify perhaps as an excise, you see, tax, which would meet the requirement of Article 1, Section 8. However, I think that it's just not an efficient way to run things and to do it. And you would probably still have end up with a terrorist organization agency trying to collect it and intimidate the people. And so I just think that if they would quit talking fair tax, direct tax, or not direct tax, but the flat tax and all of that, if they just quit talking about that and go to the Constitution and what it specifies, and then try to develop a system operating under the Constitution the way it's supposed to be, but they're spinning their wheels. They're wasting their time, as far as I'm concerned. And I remember when they first somebody came up with the idea of the flat tax, and I remember Bill Benson and I both, we took a good look at it, and then we said, well, the flat tax, as they're considering it, would still require a valid 16th Amendment. There would still be the 16th Amendment income tax, factor played into it. And so we at that point went public and with our opposition to the flat tax. It could be a voluntary tax too, you see. If we get this tax mess straightened out and get on the constitutional basis, the economy is going to be real exciting, is going to be real active, and people will have money to spend. Right now, talking to business people and such, a lot of them are just barely hanging on by the skin of their teeth. And they all tell me the same thing, that the money just isn't as plentiful out there. And as a result, people aren't spending. And so, we keep, fumbling along, bumbling along, staggering along with these old systems and these old ideas. And the country needs a constitutional tax established now, and it takes a Congress to do it right.
Well, part of my argument with them was that it's sort of like a controlled resistance kind of thing, kind of like Glenn Beck, in that it gives people a sense that somebody's looking out for them. It gives them a sense that they've got some small victory, and it justifies them to go back and sit on their couch
mm-hmm.
instead of really standing up and doing anything that's really going to make a real positive change. In other words, people could get behind something like a fair tax, and let's say they were able to garner enough support to get it done, which I doubt they will. But if they could garner the support to get it done, then people would feel like they'd had a victory, and yet the fraud and the theft would still be there, and we'd still be left with sort of the same situation we've got now with the international bank lords running the country. It would be really good that we would get rid of the IRS and no longer have April 15th and 1040s to file, and it would be good that we could get 100% of our payroll checks. And it probably would even be good for prices, because even though there would be a you know, let's say they're predicting a 23% tax on had to give my grandson a kiss there. Even though they're talking about a 23% tax on new goods, the prices would go down, because right now all of the income tax and all of the withholding tax and everything is built into the existing pricing. So the prices overall should fall, and then the difference be the consumption tax. So prices really should not go up, or the cost of the new product should not go up significantly because of that tax, because overall it should go down. So those are all good arguments, but you still got the fraud and the theft. And you still don't have, you would not have an incentive. They say that it would build in an incentive to cut spending in the government, but I don't see that. I don't see that being realized just by the fair tax in and of itself. So,
states that have adopted sales tax, they usually start out at, you know, a low percentage. And the first thing you know, the state legislature raises it up half a percent or 1%, and it's just an ongoing process. And I have a hunch that the same thing would happen with the fair tax. Congress would say, "Hey, we want to give ourselves some more pension money," we'll just raise a little more, raise the percentage on the fair tax a little bit, and we'll have the money to increase our benefits, you know, for retirement and such.
Well, we've had some folks in the chat room asking about how things are going with the wolves in Montana.
I haven't heard too much. I've gotten such a positive response from everybody that knows about it. The 6th of July, celebrating conservatism there, that group in Hamilton, Montana, they have their speaker for the month of July. Is a fish and wildlife, retired fish and wildlife biologist by the name of Jim Beers. Jim Beers had really opposed bringing in those wolves initially. And he has not let up. He's retired, but he has not let up. And so I'm hoping that things will work out to where I can... travel. I would like to be there for his presentation. I'd like to visit with some of those people to get this thing, get this ball rolling. Because we need to run these full-page ads in those newspapers. And those newspapers, when people see those, they're gonna tear out that page and they're gonna save that page because they're gonna want to keep track of what's happening. And of course, I am of the opinion that if we can get these ads started, that we will get the kind of support, financial support, across the board in Montana to keep this up, putting out these ads and explaining how that we the people, we're the ones with the power. I know I have a Montana constitution, state constitution, but it's packed away and I don't know exactly where it's at, so I contacted a fellow in Helena, Montana, and told him to look it up, because in all your state constitutions, I think every one of them, in the very beginning, they bring out how that the power that government exercises has to come from the people. It's people power. It's we the people are the source of power for any political system, and there, that I can't give you the wording exactly as it is, but it's very, very sound and very, very solid, stating that the power comes, the government exercises power, and it has to come from the government. Or from the people, and of course, we're all familiar with the Declaration of Independence, where it says deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And so these ads are going to have to explain how that we the people, we want our power back, because our power has been misused. Our power. They have used our power to create a system that has destroyed a very integral part of our economy in the state of Montana. And they've used our money. You know, over the years, the Fish and Game Department, you might say they rode herd over the elk and the moose and the deer, and they took their numbers. They counted the elk and such, and they did a fairly respectable job of managing our wild game inventory, Then here the Fish and Wildlife comes in with this Endangered Species Act and whatnot, and say, oh, we've got to bring back the wolves. And this Jim Beers, the former retired biologist, they wouldn't listen to him, but they listened to others. So this tells you that, you see, sure, these people that were promoting it, they were educated in our colleges and our universities, and they were fed a bill of goods. In fact, we had a situation about 10 years ago where there was a professor, and I don't remember which college he was in, but he was teaching the students that wolves are vegetarians. Now that sounds like somebody's telling a joke, but this guy was dead serious. And of course the word got out, and he was challenged. But that's been some years back. But this is, you know, and you know, they had school kids when they announced that they were going to have hunting seasons on the wolves because there was getting to be so many, the newspapers and such, they were getting letters from grade school kids all over the nation. Wilderness and the wildlife environmentalists, they know how to spread the propaganda, and they were spreading it on really thick in all these places across the country. And it was in the little school papers and such about the poor wolves and how they were going to be hunted down. And absolutely nothing is said about the fact that those wolves are serial killers. And those wolves, they just have decimated our game, our wild game. The wolves have pretty well gotten rid of all the moose in Montana. And they have been pretty well managed, and we were getting more moose all the time. But a moose, you would think, as big as they are, would be able to protect themselves, but they can't because they're always almost invariably they're a loner, and they have a pack of wolves. They just wear out a moose. They harass them for a day or two. The pack will take turns harassing that moose, and then when the moose gets so tired and for lack of something to eat and one thing or another, then one of the wolves will sneak in and hamstring that moose, and that moose goes down. And those wolves are eating on that moose before that moose is ever dead. They do the same thing with the elk, they are a brutal, brutal animal. Now, where in the world is the Humane Society? If someone abuses an animal, oh, my goodness, they get so upset and everything. Well, it's happening big time with the elk and the deer herds. They are being harassed. They're being just absolutely decimated. Back several years ago, the wolves hadn't been there that long, and my missus and I were going to an appointment for a Patriot something, and we were crossing an area where it was big ranches, beautiful mountain country, mountain valleys. And here was a herd of cows. I shouldn't say a herd. It was there was probably 20 head of cows and their calves. And this wolf was all we seen was the one. But that wolf was looking for an opportunity to grab a calf. And so I stopped at the next ranch and told them, what I had seen. It was in broad daylight. I don't know if they went to protect their cattle or not. I don't know, but I did my part. And of course, everybody knows that as soon as the game is pretty well gone, then you're not going to allow your children out to play like you would ordinarily. The way it is right now, if you're in wolf country in Montana, you have to lock up your pets, your dogs, your cats. You got to lock them up in the evening before dark, because if you don't, you aren't going to have any pet left in the morning. It's going to be gone, because these wolves come right into people's yards and help themselves. And so, and these are big animals. These are animals, I think they weigh 100 to 150 pounds. And, they're powerful, powerful critters. And we killed them off, way back there. The last I know of, a wolf was killed in close to Three Forks, Montana, where I went to school, in 1940. and that wolf was shot and killed by a government trapper, and they had it stuffed, you know, lifelike, and it was in the Smithsonian Institution Museum in Washington, D.C. But that was 1940. We're talking about 70 years ago. And now they've and of course that was a smaller wolf. They were the natural wolves for the area.
In other words,
I'm having trouble hearing you. Did I get muted?
Hi, Red. This
yes.
is Dr. Kate. Hi. Yes. Hi. I'm managing the switchboard, and Terry got bumped, and then he got back in, and so why don't we chat for a little bit while he gets back in?
Yeah.
Continue, please.
You have been a very, very active lady here lately, and it tells me that you're very, very serious about your commitment to our cause. And my hat is off to you.
Thank you very much. I'm just seeing it, Red. I just don't know where I've been all my life. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me see if I can get Terry back in here. Okay, Terry, you're live.
Well, thank you. That's twice now I've been dropped out of BTR, so I don't know if that's my Skype or BTR. I suspect it's BTR.
Yeah, that's going to go into another note to them. Well, Red, I'm going to come back after the break, so in the meantime, I'm going to just return you all to your chat.
Yes, we want to. We'll get after the break, we want to get into the discussion on the Gulf. We need your expertise, Dr. Kate.
Very good. Thanks.
Thank you. So at any rate, we were talking about the fact that the juries will not convict because they understand about judging the law. And what I want to do is I want to kind of use this as a segue, if you will, to the Gulf situation. But before we get into the Gulf situation, which we can do after break, I'm wondering if we could do a little brainstorming and even invite our listeners, if you want to type your ideas in chat or call in and talk to us about it, how we can use a similar situation where people are, in essence, hurting, where things are so bad on them that they don't have any choice but to get off their couch and try to figure out a solution, like they do with the hunters and the wolves up in Montana. There's other situations like that across the country that we can take advantage of, because we don't have the advantage of the lamestream media. They're not gonna do anything to help us out. But if we can find things like the wolf situation in Idaho and Wyoming and Montana in other parts of the country, where we can teach people that they can judge the law, they can challenge these unconstitutional laws like the Endangered Species Act up there, where they can challenge these things and educate them on how to be a proper juror, and then that we will nullify the law because our juries will know to acquit people for these things. How can we do this? What are the ideas on how we can take that concept and spread it across the country?
Well, I've been telling this for the last two or three weeks that we need to use these hot buttons. I call them hot buttons. We need to use them. Arizona has got an ideal situation for the freedom movement down there. They need to be using, they need to be using this, terrible situation that they have with the illegals, and the fact that the federal government is has turned out to be their enemy. You know, Obama has and his administration has now placed one of their parks over there. It's a narrow strip of land that goes from the Mexican border almost to the middle of, or the heartland of Arizona, and the Americans in the area are advised not to go there. This just absolutely just blows my mind. I don't know when I've had anything that got under my collar quite as bad as this, because this is just absolutely so outrageous. I guess that park is being used by armed units, bringing in the drugs and the illegals, more illegals, and here we're told to stay out of there. Well, now you see, if the people there in Arizona, if they would get their act together, they could get some financing. They could get financial help from people all across this nation to start running ads in the newspapers, the propaganda sheets, if you will. They need to run full page ads educating the people about jury nullification and how it works, and how that it is these are the final checks in our system of checks and balances. The next step down is the Second Amendment and armed insurrection, or armed, I shouldn't call it insurrection, because it's the government that's in rebellion. We the people are not in rebellion. When we don't pay income tax because we have discovered that this is a fraud, we're not in rebellion. It's the government's in rebellion if they harass us, if they try to enforce illegal, unlawful, unconstitutional law, and we need to identify the government as being in rebellion. We need to talk about it. We need to explain to the American people that there in Arizona, when the federal government will not enforce the law and protect our borders, our government is in rebellion, because they have a responsibility to secure our borders, and they're not doing it. They're assisting the enemy. They're letting the enemy come in, and they're assisting them as they methodically flaunt our law and thumb their nose at our Constitution and everything else. So, we've got to start using the proper definitions for things. We don't have newspapers; we just have propaganda sheets now, And the lamestream media you talk about, they're just a propaganda propaganda system, and we've just got to start calling things what they really are. Our government is in rebellion, and we need to call it that.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I was looking at the chat to see if anybody's got any great ideas about other places and ideas for building brush fires. I think the one that you mentioned about that county, that county's like, I think, the largest county in Arizona. It's supposed to be like the size of the state of Connecticut or something, just that one county.
Yeah.
And that those officials down there have actually asked for 3,000 brush troops to be brought in under the call of the governor in order to get that county back under control, because it's literally been overrun by the thugs, the gun runners and the drug runners. And the feds denied it. Yet Obama's now saying we're going to send 13,000 National Guard troops for the oil cleanup or to the Gulf Coast. that he won't spend $50,000 and solve a real problem of lawbreakers in Arizona.
Yeah, I think that if the people there would do similar to what we're thinking about in Montana with the wolf situation, I think if they would, form the organization that they need to get people working together and get them focused, and if they would run these full-page ads, educating the jury, but at the same time, they would be stating, putting the feds and the state on notice that we the people are going to take our power back. We gave power to the federal government to secure our borders, and if they don't do it, if they thumb their nose at us, then that power shouldn't lay there dormant. That power should revert back to us, we the people. We have to take it back. They're not going to give it back. You're going to have to take it back. And so they run these ads and then they say, "Okay, we're going to set a date and we're going to send a militia force over there into that county, and we're going to clean up that county of these illegals. And we're going to put the feds on notice, don't interfere, because we're taking our power back, and you haven't got any power anymore. And if we find your people in there obstructing justice, we're going to put them under arrest. We'll put together a military tribunal and prosecute them."
We need to formulate some ideas like that and send it to those people in that county in Arizona.
It's so vital that we keep talking about how we are going to take our power back. Our power. We've got to talk about our power, and we've got to talk about our money. The government isn't spending government money. The government is spending our money. And we're not happy the way they're spending our money, because they're using our money to defeat us. And so they have, they have violated our trust. Therefore, we are going to take our power back. We go to that state constitution. In every state, it's there. A clause in the very beginning of those constitutions that state that all power comes from the people. And we're going to take it back.
Go ahead, Rick.
I think that it should become kind of a cliche, or whatever they call it, you see, that we just keep telling people, we got to take our power back. We're going to take our power back. It isn't that we got to do it. We're going to do it.
Red, we're going to take a break for a few minutes, and we'll be coming back with Red Beckman, Terry Dodd, and Dr. Kate on Walls in Our Minds. Well, welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host, Red Beckman, and Dr. Kate. Kate, are you with us? I guess she's not. She's probably got herself muted, Red. Are you there, Red?
No, there I am.
I'm on, too. Yeah.
I am. I'm here.
Now it's the threesome.
Well, Kate, give us the latest on what you know about the Gulf oil situation.
Well, it really hasn't updated that much from last night in the show. And, Red, could I just respond to Red's piece for just a second?
Absolutely. As long as
before that, Red, you were talking about the Arizona-Mexico border, and I was in Tucson 2 weeks ago as a speaker at this environmental conflict resolution conference, and it was like all environmental mediators from all over the country, and it's a federal entity, and so of course there are a lot of the high ups from Interior there and so forth. And yours truly stood up in a plenary session and said, is it really true the Interior Department is not allowing the Border Police to into the parks, the Big Bend National Park and all of these other places down there? And you could have heard a pin drop. There were 300 people in that room, and man, did I get eyes. Red, they did not like that question. But, you know, having been a former Interior employee, I am outraged that this wool has been pulled over our eyes, and this is just ridiculous. I think the whole Interior Department should resign. This is outrageous. They can't do this. They're just getting around us. So,
it's rebellion, isn't it?
It is. It's total rebellion. I was so glad to hear you say that, because I guess it was several months ago, after listening to you and doing some other things, that I came to that conclusion, too. The government is in rebellion. We're not the ones in rebellion. And then it all made sense why they're trying to paint us as, you know, radicals.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
because we recognize they're in rebellion. So to bring this fast forward to the Gulf situation, Terry, there's so much, as you know, so help guide me in terms of what you'd like to focus on, but I would like to spring from your work with the grand jury and the wolves in Montana and Wyoming and Idaho, and thank you so much for that idea, that spark that's going. And I was thinking about this in relation to the Gulf crisis, because what we have is a real major situation. We can talk about all the geology of that. And we absolutely have a government that's in rebellion because it doesn't care. It is not responding. It's not letting anyone help. And from the standpoint of, people's health, they're just poisoning people and letting this stuff ruin the ability of people to move forward, I think. So I was thinking in terms of the people responding. People are getting arrested, basically, when they go out with hay bales and so forth and try to put the booms and stuff out there. If they're not with BP, which is in charge of the operations, or the Coast Guard arrests people. So all the National Guard and all those people are going down there not to deal with it, not to clean it up. They're going down there to arrest anyone who tries to clean it up. So I'm thinking, okay, what law in the United States prevents people from protecting their property or even public property? There's no law that says the government has the monopoly on that. And what would happen if we all went down there? I know that every farmer in Wyoming, in every county, in the entire state, would donate a whole crop of hay if that would help. And they'd haul it down here, you know, or anything other. So what would happen if we all, if that got mobilized, thousands of us descended on wherever the correct place is and, you know, go ahead and let them arrest, you know, be prepared to be arrested, ask for a jury trial.
I think that you need to do the proper preparation. you got to have the right setting. You've got to put the government on notice that, and do it publicly. And I think those full-page ads in the newspapers are just the ticket. You've got to say, we the people are going to take our power back, because we gave our power, we let government use a certain amount of our power, and we trusted them to manage and use our power properly and efficiently, and they have violated our trust. And we now consider the government to be in rebellion, and we are taking our power back, and we are putting the government on notice of that fact, and we are going to be there at such and such a place, and we're going to be doing what we have to do to help remedy this situation. If you put them on notice ahead of time, I think you can pull it off.
I hope I didn't go dead again.
Did I hear a pin drop?
Oh, that's me. Sorry. I put myself on mute. Sorry. I was yakking away.
I thought you were
going to
talk, and I'm like, where is she? I know she was.
Yep. No, I'm here. I think that's right, Red. I think that's absolutely correct. And we need to find the right place, too, because Sheriff Mack or some of the sheriffs down there need to get engaged, because they're supposed to be out there. In fact, they should be arresting BP, any BP worker right now, because we did not give the United States the authority to, or Congress or anyone the authority to give a private corporation, international corporation, authority to clean up our shores and deal with this. This is our thing. You know what I'm saying? Those sheriffs should be exercising that. So I thought that was, you know, these are, last night, Red, on Revolution Radio, we sort of dedicated it to a brainstorming session. And here's another idea that we came up with, and it kind of ties into the work that the general is doing, you know, General Vallely. And I don't know, Tara, if you want me to raise this or go more into the technical stuff, but the idea of the Third Continental Congress, you know, making a statement on this, or someone, whenever we talk about this, really laying the whole thing out there, just as you said right now, that could definitely be incorporated in a message where we basically see what's going on. See, if you look at this whole crisis constitutionally, you can absolutely see what is happening with this. The government's response right now, clearly they are in rebellion because they are changing our form of government in their response. They're using it to raise taxes, raise gas prices, to take our money away, take our ability away, and to boot, they're poisoning people on the coast. I have to tell you that the benzene levels and so forth, just as an aside here, Dan Gonzalez said last night, it was a number that triggered my memory on this. He said, you know, there's 17 million people in Florida. And right now there are people who are feeling ill. And from the air quality reports, which we're not getting from government sources, is pretty toxic. But Bill Ayers, a long time ago, and I'm sure he still feels this way, he said that, quote, we would have to kill 25 million people in America to achieve the full socialist takeover and the full downfall of capitalism. So in any case, you see, by the government's failure to respond, they are absolutely abdicating any kind of trust obligation, responsibility they ever had to us. And it is time to take our power back and do it, not just empty say it, do it. Yes, we're going to show up here at this time and really be prepared, because I have a number of former military friends, and, you know, they're furious. They're looking for any way not to open up, but to protect us. And we could be accompanied by our own, you know, in any case, our own force. So we can see constitutionally that that's the government's response. Now, if that their non-constitutional response. Ours is a completely different thing. It is about taking our power back, utilizing our ingenuity and our expertise to fix this thing and to help people there. It's the other way Obama's going to use this is to change the electoral map, evacuate people just in time so there's no possible way to keep up the voting situation. So anyway, that's another thing. So in terms of, for example, the general asking for you know, several officials to or the government to resign, I say that in part the Third Continental Congress statement on the BP quote-unquote accident, where we really call it out what it is, we actually call for the resignations of the Interior Department Secretary, EPA, Department of Energy Secretaries, Head of Minerals Management Service. Begin the call for this, because I can tell you that our government is entirely responsible. It was a show on TV today with the Congress grilling the BP executives. You know what? Congress should shut up and roll up their sleeves and go down to the coast and start sopping up oil with all that hot air they have. On the other hand, we wouldn't want it to explode with that hot air. Anyway, let me just back off a bit, Terry and Red, and hopefully I haven't chewed up your whole program show. What do you think about this?
Well, I'm liking what you're saying, because it's truth, and you know me, I could listen to the truth for a long time. There's no question that we've got traitors in Washington, D.C., and it's not just Obama. It's not just Rahm Emanuel. I mean, it goes way down the list.
Very deep.
In the Congress. You know, most of the Senate, most of the Congress, most of the judiciary. These people are traitors. And it's time to throw them off, just like the Declaration of Independence says we should do, as a duty, not just a right, but a duty, because they have continued the abuses in spite of being petitioned to stop it, just like the healthcare situation. That's just one little piece of this whole picture, but they knew full well that the people did not want this, and they rammed it down our throat anyway. Well, that's breaching their oath of office. It's unconstitutional.
That's rebellion.
It is rebellion.
That's rebellion. Mm-hmm.
We really need to use that word, and we need to use it in every sentence, just about, when we're dealing with them.
And just as much as using those words, we're going to take our power back.
Madam Secretary, we need to use that term in the resolution that we're about to prepare. For those that are not aware, I think everyone is probably aware, but for those that are not aware, I'm the Vice President of the Third Continental Congress, and Dr. Tate is the Secretary of the Continental Congress, of the Third Continental Congress, and we work very closely with Dan Gonzalez on a regular basis as our President of the Third Continental Congress. And we are going to be putting out some resolutions condemning some of these actions and supporting, like Kate said, the call for the resignations by General Vallely, Major General Vallely. But we need to get that term. We need to start being as good at this game as our opponents, as those that are in rebellion. We need to learn some of their techniques and employ them. You know, we can demonize things just as well as they can if we'll get with the program. And the only difference between what we'll be demonizing is that we'll be telling the truth. Where they're trying to change the definitions, we're going to restore them.
It's like, you know, it's like absolutely right before our face. It's usurpation. They took the language too. Look at any psychology text. You take the language, define it in your terms, and pretty nearly everybody is going that way. So we got to take that back. We've got to take it back. Usurpation. So fine, we'll take it back. We'll usurp it right back.
I think I detect that Dr. Kate has really picked up on that, taking our power back. I used that it'll be 4 weeks ago on Saturday. I used that Take It Back Our Power in that presentation I made at Missoula, Montana, in that rally. And it really got to me kind of as I studied that and talked about it and mulled it over in my mind, and I thought, my goodness, this is something. I've talked about taking our power back in the past, but I never really, I just didn't get an indelible print in my mind, I guess, about using that term and the rebellion. I talked about rebellion 20 years ago, but then I kind of forgot it and just hadn't thought about it until here just recently again, why I was thinking about rebellion. And now it is so obvious. It isn't. Back then, I was only one that thought that our government was in rebellion. Today, there's a lot of people out there that are going to agree with us. And I think that it would be very difficult for the politicians in Washington, D.C., the bureaucracy, to defend themselves. I think they would have a very difficult time saying, oh, we're not in rebellion, you know, because when they look at what they're doing and how that we the people don't agree, we don't like what they're doing, they're not representing us. They're representing the government. They're representing a political philosophy that's totally foreign to our Constitution.
You know, Article 4, I think the last section of Article 4 of the Constitution says that, you know, the United States shall guarantee a republican form of government to every single state,
mm-hmm.
and prevent the incursion of the executive or the legislature. So they're not doing that. And see, I'm laughing, Red, because when we say, you're in rebellion, let's say, no, we're not. All we need to say is prove it. Prove that you're not. So we need to pull out the roll of toilet paper, frankly, that shows all of the ways in which they've rebelled. You know, it'll take them forever to defend themselves. But now it is, you know, with the Gulf Coast. You know, Terry, you talked about using the same tactics. Well, you know what? We can use this crisis to get our power back, too.
Yes.
And to really educate. Really educate. Because it is absolutely right there, like the wolves. It's right there. It's your backyard. It's your pet. It's your livestock. That's your livelihood.
These things are destroying our heritage.
Correct.
You see, and we've got to talk about heritage. Those wolves have destroyed the heritage that over 100 years, 150 years of history has established a very strong heritage in western Montana of tourist attractions, hunters and fishermen, and we have beautiful scenery and so much, and it is so much a part of our economy. Our motels, our restaurants, they all thrive because of the tourist trade. This wolf thing has destroyed that. And it was our money that politicians and environmentalists, political animals, the environmentalist is a political animal as far as I'm concerned. And they have used our money to literally destroy our heritage, our economy, our peace, our pursuit of happiness and such has been just absolutely crippled.
I totally agree.
I don't think that we have pursued the bureaucracy and the government as much as we should, because we didn't use the terms rebellion and taking our power back and such. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something, if we build on this, I think that we can put the government on the defensive. At this moment, we're on the defensive. But we can change that.
I think so, too. And I think this is really, on some level, an extreme psychological warfare, because
mm-hmm.
They are acting so outrageously that it drives you crazy. You want to focus on that behavior. 58 days, and he's had 10, you know, golf matches and, you know, saying, "Hey, Jude," you know, with Paul McCartney. They want us to focus on that behavior and be so outraged. The last thing they actually expect is to set that aside for a moment and deal with it later and actually take some action. That's what I think, and I think that's what we're talking about here, Red. And my feeling is that it's getting closer and closer and closer, this absolute time. And I feel like we, too, are being presented the opportunities to finally step up. And, you know, the destruction of the livelihood of those five, quote-unquote, red states and the millions of people there and the disruption, that's their plan. They're totally happy to hang around.
Yeah, and the
and
waste.
Grill, yeah, and we're outraged. We're talking and screaming and yelling and saying, why are they doing that? Well, you know, it's time to put that one aside later, because that's
mm-hmm.
huge emotional drain on all of us. We have to be like steel eyes and see right through this and then focus on the weak spots, because I maintain, even though they think they have everything under control, and they do, there is one thing that's missing that they don't have, and I think that's love for America. They don't have it, and
right.
they don't know what that is. And right now, the people are boiling and seething. It's everywhere. It's in the grocery store. It's at the gas station. It's everywhere. And providing a vehicle,
another,
you know.
There's another key.
Good.
This is the people that are standing up to government. We love our country. We love our country. And this is why, you know, we're doing what we're doing. We want to preserve our country. Well, our country is permanent. We want to preserve our lawful form of government.
Yes, that's right. You know, and I've heard so many people say, well, what do you got, you know, when they talk about the Tea Party, which I, you know, support, but I'm talking something way more serious than that right now. You know, what do you think about gay rights, or what do you think about this or that? It's just like, you know, that's irrelevant right now. You know, it's really about our country. And that is one thing that I think a lot of Americans really in their gut know. They can't describe it, but I call it love for country. I call that a few of us got that education and got it and still have it now.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a critical moment, Red, and I'm outraged. I'm distraught by the Gulf Coast aspect, as well as, like I say, I've been a natural resource manager my whole life. I work for Interior, all of that stuff, and I am horrified. I have to, like, get on my knees every day, Red, and repent. I don't want to be the only scientist repenting for all the millions of scientists out there, but, you know.
Well, I think the scientists on the other side are a minority, but they're a loud minority,
right,
and
right.
The ones that really are real scientists, I think they just they've been a little too quiet.
Mm-hmm. Probably scared. Probably very
yeah.
scared, because
I
just feel fortunate that I don't work in that environment anymore, and that, you know, my eyes have been opened to science. And that's only because I've been writing on my blog on that. But, you know, with regard to the Gulf Coast piece, you know, where they're drilling is not a stable area. Where this happened is not
mm-hmm.
geologically stable. And they have no idea how to do it. But as I was saying last night, I feel like they've touched something that God put there. And that is really bad news.
Yes. They're tampering with the unknown, and every time there's a volcano eruption and such, I say, well, hell is having to enlarge itself again because there's so many heading that direction. And I said that when this thing happened. And, of course, I was talking with a friend in Helena, Montana, and we came to a conclusion that if they would give us the opportunity, we could solve that for them down there. But we're not foolish enough to think they're going to give us the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
We think that we just applied some principles and came up with an idea that I think would work, and it wouldn't take an awful lot of time, and it wouldn't take an awful lot of money. It wouldn't take billions of dollars. It would take a few million to probably put it together. But and of course, it would have to be an emergency type of thing where everything would be rush to get it done. But they're not using good sense. It's not. My oldest son worked in the oil patch back in the late 70s and early 80s. And we've talked about this. He worked for a service company, and they dealt with all kinds of different problems in the oil fields up in the Williston Basin and even down into Wyoming and such at times. But it's going to take some good old common sense to tackle that thing. And you see, when they put that restriction on there, they thought they could slow it down. They put a collar on that pipe of some kind and thought they could, but what they did, the pressures are so unbelievable high. Those pressures are very hard to handle. In fact, if some of the pressures are as high as what I've heard, we don't have anything that would handle those kind of pressures. And so they've got to open it up, and they've got to put a deal over the top of that that takes that oil all the way to the surface. You see, the problem, there's all these different currents in the ocean, and that oil comes out at a tremendous amount of pressure and such. Well, when it gets up into the water, then these currents push it in different directions, and that's what spreads it all over. The key is they've got to put something over the top of that so that oil goes up through and it's not pushed around by the currents, and it has to go up, and they have to have a system there where they can have their tankers there and save that oil. That oil is money in the bank, you might say. But the way they're doing it, they're losing it.
That's right, and therein is the neglect and the dereliction of duty. And they do not have the right to have the keys to our country. They all need to go. And we need to send a flotilla of private, industrialists who can skim it, scoop it up, put it in the tanker, and do it. I mean, we need to mobilize thousands. Because they're sending the National Guard down there to prevent us from doing that.
The problem, Dr. Kate, is that if they don't more or less put it in a controlled system, the light ends. You see, the oil that gets washed up on the beaches and such, that's just the heavy end. Because as soon as that breaks out on top of the ocean, the light end of it starts to evaporate. The light ends of that oil.
It's that's already happening now.
Yeah, it happens within minutes after that oil breaks out on the top of the surface, the light ends, they start evaporating off, the gasoline, the ether, the diesel and all, that all evaporates off, and by the time that oil reaches the beach, all that's left is the heavy end. And so the money end of it is the light, the gasolines and the diesel, the kerosenes and all of that. Those are gone within, you know, just a matter of, well, probably in the matter of an hour or so when that oil hits the surface. It's the light ends are gone. They're dissipating. And,
so see, Red, that is where the air quality problem is appearing. And so,
yes.
Are you suggesting is there technology to capture that on the surface right now? Because that's brilliant.
Absolutely, just common sense, and
I can
tell them. All they got to do is call me on the phone, and I'll tell them how to do it.
You got
it. I'm not going down there. I'm not going down there. But I can tell them if they've got some engineers that have some common sense. It's just so simple, and it could be done in a matter of a couple of weeks. They would have to build this thing from scratch, and so there'd be a lot of welding, a lot of steel. But they've got to put a pipe a container that goes over that plume coming out of that pipe. They got to take that restriction off because it's forcing. They've cracked the crust of the earth.
Yes. That's correct.
And I've heard that they have had oil coming up 20 miles away,
mm-hmm.
which tells us really how serious this is. And so they've got to take that restriction that they've got. They've got to get that off of there and get it off immediately. Now, they may have done that because they recognize that that's what's causing that oil to to come up through the surface or through these fissures, in the crust, and of course, this thing it's just common sense. There's nothing sophisticated about it at all. It's very, very simple. And you see, these people have such a tendency to, they've always. Use technological excuses and such to run the costs up. And so common sense really doesn't have, much of a place in those kind of circles.
Brilliant, Red. I thank you so much for that because, of course, now I have all these other ideas. Thank you so much. Terry, are you there?
I am. I had a phone call, so I muted myself and I forgot.
Okay.
Red, I need to bring you up to date. Actually, Kate and I had an executive meeting in the private chat, and that's why we decided to blow through two of our breaks. We knew that you had family there. I've actually got some family at my house, too. We've decided that we want to close this a little early so that you can get with your family, and I may, too. But we'd like to close it with prayer. We'd like to close with prayer.
Let me say this. Erlene and I, we had our 58th wedding anniversary here the 10th of June, and my one granddaughter just came in and showed me a picture on her little handheld thing. I don't know what they call them. She showed me a picture. Now, this baby was born in Minneapolis 2 days ago, cesarean section. Our first great grandchild, and my granddaughter just came in while I was talking and held her up her little handheld deal and showed me a picture of my new great grandchild, just the first one, and it's kind of crazy because we've been married 58 years and we're just our offspring aren't all that prolific, I guess. But that's just aside from everything else here. Now you go ahead and say what you wanted to say, Terry. I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, that's okay. We just wanted to you know, we're not going to run all the way to the end of the top of the hour like we normally would tonight. We're going to close this with hopefully, can I talk you into giving us one of your good Red Beckman prayers to close us out, and then we'll call it a night and get with our families, because I believe that's very important.
Yeah, I have a granddaughter here from a little short break from the University of Idaho in Moscow, Idaho, and she's just going to be here this evening. So I appreciate this. I'll say a prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank Thee because we are able to detect Your inspiration, Your stimulation of our thinking and our thoughts. And we just pray, dear Lord, that You would look down upon this country with Your mercy, because we're going to need a lot of Your mercy, because we have drifted so far into the sin and the idolatry that You abhor. And we just pray, dear Lord, that You would accept our apologies, asking for forgiveness for our failures, and we just pray that You would help us to be available. Help us to be available to help make the remedy, or bring about a remedy, help bring about a spiritual renewal in this country. We pray this in Thy precious and holy name. Amen.
Amen. Red, go be with your family. Kate, thanks for coming and joining us. Thanks to all of our guests, and we will we'll be back next week with a very exciting show. I'm hoping that we're going to get Earl Johnson from the Tea Party down in Texas to come and join us. Very interesting character, and we'll have a lot to talk about.
Very
thanks,
good.
Everyone.
You
have
bet.
A good week.
You bet. Bye. What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate? What if His people prayed? And those who bear His name would only seek His face, yeah, and turn from their own ways. And what would happen if we prayed for those raised up to lead the way? Then maybe kids in school could pray. Unborn children see light of day. What is the light that we pursue? Came from a hunger for the truth. What if the family turned to Jesus? Stopped asking Oprah what to do. What if His people prayed? And those who bear His name would only seek His face, yeah. Turn from their own ways. He said that He would hear. His promise has been made. He answered loud and clear. Yeah. If only we would pray.